morning, sir. Are you Mr. Pinkham?
Yes, sir. May it please the court, counsel, good morning, your honors. My name is Jimmy Pinkham, deputy county attorney for the Douglas County Attorney's Office, here representing the appellant, Douglas County, Nebraska, in this matter. Your honor, the appellants are here today respectfully requesting that the court reverse the trial court's decision that the appellee, Rachel Timberlake, falls under the contractual category of injured on duty status under the collective bargaining agreement. In an alternative, we would respectfully request that the court remand the issue back to the trial court if the court determines that the contractual language is in fact ambiguous. Now, the facts of this case are very simple, your honors. Ms. Timberlake was working with a supervisor, Scott Sampson, at the Douglas County Department of Corrections. Mr. Sampson began having a seizure, began falling from his chair. Ms. Timberlake attempted to prevent him from falling, lost her balance, and hit her head against the concrete wall behind her, receiving a concussion in the process. Now, after receiving the concussion, she was able to get up and call for a code green, which in the Douglas County Department of Corrections is a call for medical personnel. At that point, she was taken to the emergency room along with her supervisor. Now, where this case turns a little bit is that she obviously, when returning from work, applied for what is called injured on duty status under the collective bargaining agreement. Ms. Timberlake is obviously qualified for workers' compensation. However, under the collective bargaining agreement, Article 25, Section 1, if an individual falls under certain requirements or certain circumstances, they can receive additional benefits where they would receive additional pay under the collective bargaining agreement.
Is this a question of fact or a question of law with regard to whether she qualifies for injury on duty benefits?
Well, Your Honor, if it's found by the court that it is clear and unambiguous language, then it would be purely a statutory a contractual interpretation issue. The contract specifically states that injured on duty will mean that a corrections officer while in the employee of the DCDC is injured while performing high-risk duty, including responding to a code, and that said injury is a direct result of that high-risk duty. It's the appellant's opinion that the next sentence is the operative language. High-risk duty includes, number one, responding to a code, and number two, interaction with an inmate.
But are you arguing that include is the word is exclusive, and you only look for that?
That's correct. And in fact, the trial court said that the word includes is an easily understandable word. Obviously, the appellants would disagree. The First Circuit, the Fourth Circuit, and the Federal Circuit have all actually said that the word including, can actually be used as a limiting term to be restrictive or definitional.
But there's other case law that goes the other way.
Absolutely, there is. And it's important that we look at the context of the contract, look at all four corners of the contract in this issue.
If she was responding to a green code, she would be covered, would she not?
Well, it depends on the reading of this sentence. If the court reads that it is exhaustive or limiting and conjunctive, which is the appellant's argument, that you are required to have both a code, responding to a code, and interaction with an inmate.
Well, you mean unless they're interacting with an inmate, there is no code that an employee could fit under?
Well, Your Honors, we're asking that the court find that not only are you required to respond to a code, but you're also required to be interacting with an inmate. The reason for that is there are five codes. There's a green code, which is medical personnel.
And that was present here, wasn't it?
That's correct. But there's also other codes. One specifically would be a code yellow, which is a false alarm. Now, logically, if there's a false alarm code, you are returning from a previous code. It's been a false alarm. There's no longer a code. You are returning from that code.
No, I suppose the false alarm goes off and you dash out there and you run down the stairs and you trip and fall and you seriously injure yourself. You're responding to a code. Isn't that injury on duty? You don't look at whether it's a false alarm or not. There's a code that requires instant action. And in her case, she's responding to what she later determines is code green. Why doesn't the contract say it only applies to these two things instead of just describing a couple instances where you could be compensated for injury on duty?
Sure. Why isn't this sentence illustrative? Mm-hmm. There's a few reasons for that. First of all, if you look at the contract as a whole, we see that the drafters of the contract use the phrase "but not limited to" several times in the contract.
But if she's responding to a false alarm and falls down the stairs, you're saying she can't recover because she didn't have interaction with an inmate?
That's correct.
Is that a reasonable interpretation of this code?
I believe it's a reasonable interpretation. It's possible if the court determines that there are several reasonable interpretations. In fact, the court seems in its order to have a different interpretation than what the appellees or the appellants determined. So we have three.
The high risk duty benefit, if you will, is that they receive a benefit above and beyond workers' compensation benefits because of the high risk associated with interaction with inmates. Isn't that where this is headed? You're not suggesting, in response to Justice Wright's question, that someone who is responding to a false alarm and falls down has no recourse at all. It's just that they don't qualify under the special high-risk benefit.
That's absolutely correct. The high-risk duty is important here. The appellees, in their brief in page 13, push forward that argument that the operative language is not the word includes and the word and, but actually the words high-risk duty. He goes on in the brief to define the words high and risk. The court did this previously, this court, in Mitchell versus Douglas County in 1983. It was regarding a resolution put forth by the Douglas County Board of Commissioners providing a high-risk duty benefit to sheriffs who were injured during a high-risk duty in the normal course of their work. Now, that the facts of that case, and in fact the court's interpretation of the resolution language, is important here because not only do they provide definitions of high-risk duty, but they also provide examples of what is high-risk duty and what is not high-risk duty. The two examples that they gave that were operative to that particular case of what is not high-risk duty would be being engaged in a high-stress obstacle course where you're firing weapons while moving. An individual had a heart attack on his second run of that obstacle course. Court found that not to be high-risk duty, running around firing weapons on an obstacle course. What the court did find to be high-risk duty, two examples, chasing a felon or attempting to get into a home where a felon has barricaded himself inside. I think that's very important here, Your Honors, that the two examples that this court offered involved felon involvement. The argument specifically for the false alarm is that under that circumstance, even if you are walking back to your station returning from a false alarm code, if you trip and fall, you could receive, that would be determined high-risk duty. The appellee in its brief even stated that a slip and fall, that's not what happened here, and by no means is the appellee saying that a slip and fall falls under high-risk duty. But again, if we look at the contract as a whole, the fact that the drafters of the contract had used including but not limited to previously in the contract.
But not in Article 1.
That's correct. Or not in Article 25.
25, rather.
That's correct.
Is that significant?
I think that it is. Yeah. And by my count, 7 or 8 times the drafters used the word including or includes or include. Only 2 times did they use including but not limited.
Which would lead one to believe they knew what they were doing, and in Chapter 25 they didn't do that.
Absolutely. I think what's also important is the preceding sentence before where the appellants believe high-risk duty is defined. That sentence states, injured on duty will mean that a corrections officer while in the employ of the Douglas County Department of Corrections is injured while performing high-risk duty, including responding to a code, is injured while performing, and that said injury is a direct result of that high-risk duty.
So, let me interrupt you. Supervisor Foxhall, one of his reasons for rejecting the plaintiff's claim was that she didn't fill out a form properly or in time?
Well, I believe...
Are you conceding that, or are you still arguing that point?
Absolutely not. I believe in reading through the transcript from Dr. Fossil, he lets it go. He lets the issue go.
We don't have to be concerned with that.
No. Okay. No. That Article 25, Section 1 language is important. Again, there's that first sentence. Your Honors, I apologize. I would respectfully request that this court find that the trial court was incorrect in its determination that Ms. Timberlake falls under the definition of high-risk duty. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Corrigan, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Mr. Pinkham. My name is John Corrigan. I'm here on behalf of Rochelle Timberlake, who is the plaintiff appellee in this matter. And getting to the heart of the issue, Article 25, Section 1 of the contract that was before the court, this is obviously the meaning of the contract is a question of law. Whether the plaintiff satisfied her entitlements to the benefits provided by the contract is a question of fact. And we believe that the evidence established that she did, in fact, engage in high-risk duty, was injured, suffered disability. She's off work for several days. The difference, obviously the main economic difference here is employees off for 7 days before she can be entitled to temporary total disability under the Work Comp Act under this contract. She doesn't have to expend any of her own personal leave. She's entitled to be paid from the moment that she's temporarily disabled.
Paid her full wages, and then this workman's comp is deducted from it.
Once workers' compensation kicks in, then the employer simply has to pay the difference between the temporary disability and 100% salary. So our position is simply this. When the contract, Article 25, Section 21, states in the first sentence, injured on duty will mean that a corrections officer, while in the employ of Douglas County Corrections Department, is injured while performing high-risk duty, comma, including responding to a code, comma, and that said injury is a direct result of that high-risk duty, period. That's what it means. And by saying including responding to a code, the English language compels the conclusion that it has to include things other than responding to a code. But the county to argue that in order to be entitled to IOD, you have to have two essential elements, that being you have to be responding to a code and there has to be interaction with a violent inmate. That's simply not what the contract says. The contract doesn't create essential elements. The only elements that are required are high-risk duty.
What's the meaning of the second sentence?
Well, the second sentence simply says that high-risk duty includes the violent inmate and responding to a code, but it doesn't exclude other types of activities. And the reason that this is obvious under the contract is they've created a committee to deal with these dynamic situations. If you look at Exhibit 11 in this case, the report from the officer, which she drafted after she returned, she said she noticed the guy, her supervisor, his chin goes straight to the roof, blood coming out of his mouth, he's going through a seizure. She turned on a radio so she could call the code on channel 1, and before she was able to do that, he slumps out of the chair, she catches him, hits her head, gets a concussion. These are dynamic situations, and so if they wanted the contract to mean what they say it means now, it should have said, that really needed to say high risk duty means, not includes, because you have the word include above as additional language, but not exclusive language. And based on those facts, I mean the facts of her responding to this medical emergency, which
is response to all the codes a high risk duty?
I think it's factual specific. You could be responding to a code of needs medical help.
If you take it literally, high risk duty is or includes responding to a code. It doesn't differentiate what code it is, so you have several different codes. So if you take it literally, responding to any code would be high-risk duty.
I think that, from my perspective, that compels us to go look at the first sentence. And you have to be injured while performing high-risk duty.
Right.
And that can mean
several things. An injury is Well, is responding, in taking this factual scenario, responding to somebody who's having a seizure, is she engaged in a high-risk duty at that time?
The fact that the security or corrections officer, particularly a floor supervisor, is suffering from physical and mental incapacity is a security risk in the facility. And that was testified to by the director. So yes, once she engages in emergency medical services or assistance, she's engaged in high-risk duty.
Your argument is that once she responds to a code and is injured, then it's compensable.
It is. She's entitled to the benefit. Yes.
And you would agree that there was no inmate involvement in this event?
There is no inmate involvement, and I guess if the parties wanted to require inmate involvement, that could have been accomplished with a very simple different language change than the language that was used. The language is open to other emergency incidents. If it was exclusively for inmate involvement, then they could have said that. But isn't exclusively, and you can imagine situations where you wouldn't want that, in the sense that you have two officers fighting. That actually happens. But we're not contending that there's inmate involvement, and we don't think that the contract requires the same.
Do you think it is a reasonable reading, I'm not saying the only reading, but a reasonable reading of the second sentence that both aspects are required, both responding to a code and involvement with an inmate because of the use of the word and, thereby conjunctive? Is that not a reasonable reading?
Certainly by using the conjunctive, one would have to conclude that high-risk duty includes these two things. But the problem is, it is not a reasonable reading of that sentence to say that that is the only way you can be entitled to the benefit, because they use the word includes, and they use the word including above. So if they wanted to say, the reasonable reading, if it said high-risk duty means 1 and 2, then yes, that's the reading, and we would be done.
Do you think that your opponent, instead of the word and, is using while for its reading?
Perhaps. I think that my take on the matter is that the director wants to reserve these situations for inmate contact. And those are certainly dangerous situations. But given the language that the parties used, and this is important because the county's position is, well, we made an offer of proof. I don't think that there is an offer of proof here. I think that both sides said, we agree that this is clear and unambiguous language. And the court agreed that it was, but sided with the employee's definition or interpretation.
So no offers of proof would be required, unambiguous. You don't
want
to
other
stuff.
Well, an offer of proof is only required when evidence is excluded.
So is the county reading this high-risk duty includes, one, responding to a code while interacting with an inmate?
I think so, yes.
If we were to find this to be ambiguous, would it be helpful to anyone to have a further hearing on this?
Well, I guess the county would say, yeah, they want a more hearing, you know, a further hearing, because they want to offer evidence about what they think some extrinsic evidence would show what it meant. But our feeling is it's not ambiguous, and I think that both parties agreed that it wasn't at the time. It was simply...
You agree that we're not bound. That's a question of law. Ambiguity is a question of law.
We're not
bound by the parties' agreement, correct?
No dispute in that regard. And I wouldn't say it was an agreement. It was simply the fact that both parties felt that way.
They urged opposite interpretations, both of which they contended were plain and unambiguous.
Correct. And with this respect to the argument that the county makes that the director has made some determination here and that should be given weight, I mean, that, That's essentially an argument that his judgment is not subject to judicial review under the contract. We would not accept that.
If you were interacting with an inmate and you were injured, under this agreement, would you be compensated if you weren't responding to any particular code?
I think it depends. Certainly in a situation such as this where it is a code, maybe you got injured interacting with an inmate, and then the code was called later, but the injury took place beforehand, you're going to get compensated. If the inmate isn't violent, say you're injured interacting with an inmate because you bump into him and fall down.
Well, the person wasn't responding to any code, just happened to be there, and the inmate got violent.
Well, that's
and the officer's injured. There isn't any response to a code, is there?
No, there doesn't have to be.
Right.
All it has to be is high-risk duty. And my position, the union's position, is you walk down the halls with dangerous inmates in a confined facility where you don't have any weapons and all you have is a pack on your back to call for help, and somebody wants to assault you, you're engaged in high-risk duty. Thank you. I ask the court to affirm the lower court and grant attorney's fees in this court pursuant to the first thing in question. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on then to the next case of the day, which is State versus Jin R. Wang. I am recused from this matter, so Justice Wright will be presiding. He will also be presiding.